Imagine this. You're a service member, totally dedicated to your military career, and then suddenly, wham, you're facing consequences that could just derail everything. But, and here's the kicker, it feels like you didn't get a fair shot to defend yourself. That was pretty much the situation for Captain John Carr in the Delaware Army National Guard's Active Guard Reserve program. It really makes you wonder, where's the line between the military needing order and a service member's basic right to due process?
That's exactly right. And what's so interesting here is that very tension, between the necessary administrative power the military needs and the individual rights we think everyone should have. So today we're diving into a specific court case that really grapples with that. When does a military termination actually cross the line and violate someone's constitutional rights? Specifically, we're looking at this idea of a liberty interest.
Okay, so for this deep dive, our main source is the court opinion itself, Carr v. Castle. It's a federal district court case from Delaware, 1991. And our mission, basically, is to understand how the court handled Captain Carr's claim that his firing was unfair and, importantly, hurt his reputation. We'll be looking closely at this legal test they used, the Stigma Plus test.
Yeah, this case gives us a really good look at how the legal system tries to balance things. On one hand, the military needs to operate efficiently, but on the other, members have constitutional protections. It forces the question, what exactly has to happen for a military termination to violate someone's rights?
So to really get into the court's thinking, we need the details. Who were the main players here?
Right, so at the center, obviously, is Captain John Carr. He was in the AGR program, the Active Guard Reserve, with the Delaware Army National Guard. The lawsuit was filed against several Delaware officials, including the governor at the time, Michael Castle, because he's technically the commander-in-chief of the state's National Guard, and also some high-ranking guard officers. Oh, and interestingly, the U.S. government actually stepped in, intervened in the case too.
And what actually led to Captain Carr getting kicked out of the AGR program? What were the official reasons?
Well, according to the record, his superiors cited dereliction of duty and substandard performance. These came from performance reviews by Lieutenant Colonel Cochran and Brigadier General Trivets, who are, up his chain of command.
Dereliction of duty, substandard performance. Those sound pretty serious, especially in the military.
They are.
What was Carr's side of the story? Why did he think it was wrongful?
Carr argued it wasn't really about his performance. He claimed it was retaliation, basically payback stemming from conflicts he'd had with those superiors. He believed the accusations were bogus, just fueled by personal dislike. And crucially, he argued that getting fired under this cloud really damaged his professional reputation and would mess up his future career chances. So you can see it wasn't just an internal dispute in his mind.
Right. It wasn't just this isn't fair, but this actively harms my future. Makes sense. What were his main legal arguments then?
The core of his case was procedural due process. He basically said, hey, you didn't give me a proper hearing before firing me, and the appeal process afterwards wasn't good enough. He argued this violated his 14th Amendment rights. He did raise some other points like substantive due process, but the procedural angle, especially tied to his reputation, that became the main event.
And that's where this liberty interest concept really comes into play, right? How did that fit into his argument?
Exactly. Carr argued that those specific reasons given for firing him, dereliction of duty, substandard performance, were so damaging, so stigmatizing, that they affected his liberty interest in his good name, his reputation, and his ability to find other work. He claimed these charges were like a scarlet letter that would stop him from continuing his career. And, dereliction of duty is actually a potential crime under the UCMJ, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So the court acknowledged it could be stigmatizing.
So the court had to figure out, okay, were these charges serious enough, and was the way they were handled bad enough to violate his constitutional rights? What test did they use?
Right. This is where that Stigma Plus test comes in. The court made it clear. Just getting fired from a government job, even with negative reasons attached, doesn't automatically mean your due process rights were violated.
Okay, not automatic.
No. To hit that level, to involve a protected liberty interest, you need to show Stigma Plus. This tells you the court's really looking for tangible, widespread harm to future job prospects, not just, the internal unfairness of the firing itself. It sets a pretty high bar.
Okay, let's unpack that. Stigma plus. What does each part mean here?
So the stigma part is about the nature of the charges. They have to be serious enough to really damage your reputation, carry a real sense of disgrace. Like we said, dereliction of duty, potentially being a crime, could meet that stigma threshold.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like something that could wreck a reputation, especially in the military structure. So what's the plus part?
The plus is the really critical extra piece. It means the damaging, stigmatizing information has to be publicly disclosed by the government employer. The stigma itself isn't enough. You need proof that the bad stuff got out beyond just internal military channels. Mm-hmm. Like, did it leak to the public? Was it shared with potential future employers?
Okay. Yep.
And then that public disclosure has to cause real, tangible harm, like measurably hurting your ability to get another job.
Okay. So it's not just what was said, but who heard it. How did this whole stigma plus thing apply to Captain Carr specifically?
This is where it got tough for Carr. The court basically said, yeah, okay, dereliction of duty, substandard performance, those could be stigmatizing.
Right.
But, and this was the key, Carr didn't show enough proof that the Delaware Army National Guard actually publicly disseminated those reasons.
So even though the charges were bad because they weren't, like, announced to the world, the plus wasn't met.
Exactly. The court looked at the evidence, the memos, the performance reviews, and saw them mostly as internal documents, stuff circulating within the chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't evidence they were leaked or shared outside the military. So because there was no public disclosure, the court concluded Carr's liberty interest wasn't implicated in a way that triggers constitutional due process protection in this situation.
Wow. That seems like a really, really important point for law students. So even if your reputation tanks within your job, if it doesn't leak out publicly, it might not reach that constitutional level.
That's a huge takeaway here. The court stressed that the due process clause is mainly concerned with reputational harm that truly forecloses future job opportunities in a broad sense.
Forecloses that. Okay.
Without public sharing of the stigmatizing info, the court felt Carr hadn't shown his ability to find other work was significantly hurt because the public knew about these specific charges.
Okay. Now, Carr also argued the process itself was unfair, right? Like not getting a hearing before they decided to fire him. How did the court handle that?
Yeah, they looked at the relevant regulation, National Guard Bureau Regulation 600-5, which outlined the separation process. The court admitted these military procedures weren't the same as what you might get in a civilian job, like no automatic right to a formal pre-termination hearing.
Right.
But ultimately, the court said these regulations were constitutional.
So they basically gave more weight, more deference to the military's own way of doing things.
Absolutely. The court was pretty explicit, saying courts need to give the military wide latitude in its decisions to maintain discipline and effectiveness.
Makes sense in a way.
They acknowledged the military is unique, different from civilian life. And the regulation did give Carr ways to respond to the accusations, even without a formal hearing. The court decided that was enough, constitutionally speaking, within that military context.
It's interesting to think how different that might be in a regular civilian job. You mentioned Board of Regents v. Roth earlier, that case about a professor not getting rehired. How did that relate or not relate here?
Well, Roth deals with similar ideas, property and liberty interests and jobs. But the Carr court drew a clear line because of the military setting.
Okay.
Civilian job cases often use different due process standards. Here, that deference to military authority and the specific rules in NGR 600-5 were key.
Mm-hmm.
The court basically used a different lens than it might for, say, a university professor. In civilian jobs, sometimes the reputational harm itself might be enough. But in Carr, that public disclosure aspect linked to the military context was crucial.
Gotcha. Now, you mentioned something really interesting earlier. The court initially ruled for Carr, then changed its mind on reconsideration. What was the initial worry? What part of the rules did they first question?
Yeah, that's a critical twist. Initially, the court did seem unsure if the process under NGR 600-5 gave a Carr enough of a chance to fight back, enough procedural due process.
Mm-hmm.
The first ruling hinted that maybe the regulations weren't quite sufficient. But then, on reconsideration, especially after the U.S. government jumped in and really hammered the stigma plus argument, the court shifted its focus.
Ah, the government's argument made a difference.
It seems so. The defendants basically argued, look, even if you think the internal process wasn't perfect, Carr still hasn't shown the plus part, the public disclosure. And that lack of publicity became the deal breaker. It led the court to reverse itself and rule against Carr. It really shows how vital that public disclosure element is for this kind of liberty interest claim in the military context.
So the lack of proof that the reasons got out publicly ended up being the deciding factor, overriding any initial concerns about the internal process itself. That's key.
Exactly. It hammers home. For this specific type of liberty interest claim, you need both the stigma and the public disclosure causing tangible harm. One without the other wasn't enough here.
Okay, so let's wrap this up for our law student listeners. What are the absolute must-know takeaways from our dive into Carvey Castle?
Okay, number one, getting fired from a government job, even the military, doesn't automatically mean you get full constitutional due process. There's a threshold. Number two, the court drew a sharp line between how bad the charges were, dereliction, substandard performance, and whether those charges were made public by the military. The lack of publicity was decisive against Carr.
So serious charges kept internal aren't enough on their own for this type of claim?
Correct. Which brings us to number three. The stigma plus test is king here. Stigma alone isn't enough. It needs to be coupled with public disclosure by the government employer, and that disclosure has to cause tangible harm, like blocking future job prospects.
And we can't forget the context, right? The military setting.
Definitely not. Point four is that judicial deference to military procedures. The court gave the military's rules, NGR 600-5, significant weight, acknowledging it's different from civilian employment, which Roth kind of highlights by contrast.
Okay.
And finally, number five, the case's own procedural history, the initial win for Carr, then the reversal really underscores how crucial that lack of public dissemination argument became. Small details can flip the outcome.
So, bottom line, bad reasons kept inside the military are treated differently by the courts than bad reasons shouted from the rooftops that demonstrably hurt someone's future career.
That sums it up perfectly. Mm. A very accurate summary of the core ideas.
So, thinking beyond this specific case, for law students listening, it really tees up a bigger question, doesn't it? Given how unique military service is, you know, the need for discipline, the hierarchy, national security implications, where should we draw the line? How do we balance giving service members fair due process while still letting the military manage its people effectively? Does this publicity requirement, like we saw in Carr, really do enough to protect the liberty interests, the reputations of people serving?
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely something complex to chew on as you go through law school and maybe encounter military law.
Absolutely. Okay. It really pushes us to think hard about balancing individual rights with the needs of vital institutions like the armed forces.
Mm.
It's not always a simple answer.